Trend number one, no more limits to growth. In 1972, the Limits to Growth, or LTG report to the Club of Rome, raised the question about whether growth can continue indefinitely on a finite planet. The book presented 12 scenarios for the world future up to the year 2100. Six were negative, portraying various types of collapse, and six were positive, portraying various degrees of sustainable development. However, LTG did not take a definitive position on which of the scenarios was the most likely, simply because there was not enough information available in 1972. This lack of information constrained LTG to two main assertions. First, the world is small. The human ecological footprint cannot continue to grow forever. In fact, the planet is so small that growth will stop within 100 years. And second, there is a danger of overshoot. The major systems of governance, that is, capitalism and democracy, will prove unable to stop growth before the human footprint exceeds the carrying capacity of the planet. Global society will react too late. Overshoot will occur. And once in overshoot, contraction, in the form of managed decline or chaotic collapse, to sustainable modes of operation, will be unavoidable. Last year, on the 40th anniversary of LTG, one of the authors, a Norwegian professor named Jorgen Randers, published a sequel to LTG titled 2052, a global forecast for the next 40 years. It examines the forecasts from 1972, then makes a series of forecasts through 2052. From the standpoint of the growing debate over the threats, opportunities, and policies related to economic growth, this book could not have come at a better time. Not only does it give Randers and his peers an effective platform for weighing in on the debate, but it provides a clear reference point, which others can use to evaluate the LTG argument and its logical antithesis that we'll call No Limits to Growth, or NLTG. NLTG does not assume that there are literally no limits to economic growth, but simply that meaningful limits imposed by physical resources are economically meaningless for at least the next order of magnitude of economic growth, if society uses proven and emerging technologies. For purposes of discussion, the Trends editors carefully examined the mathematical models and assumptions Randers and his team used to create the world described in 2052. This permits us to analyze LTG-based forecasts for the next 40 years and create parallel forecasts contrasting the implications of policies and business decisions driven by NLTG versus LTG worldviews. Let's start, as Randers does, by examining where we are and what we've learned since 1972. According to Randers, we know that growth has continued unremittingly in terms of the global population, the world economy, and the human footprint. For the purposes of forecasting, he breaks the world up into five regions. 1. The United States. 2. The rest of the advanced OECD nations. 3. China. 4. The 14 largest emerging economies, including Brazil, Russia, and India. And finally, 5, the 140 countries that make up the so-called rest of the world. Under the assumptions of the 2052 forecast model, global growth slows, but not quickly enough, to avoid a climate crisis in the middle of the 21st century. The model is based on region-by-region forecasts for population growth, GDP, energy consumption, and other resource utilization, as well as estimates for carbon dioxide levels, temperature, and sea level rise. Consider the 2052 population forecast. Randers assumes the global population will peak at about 8 billion people around 2040. This is substantially below the standard UN forecast, and the reason is a continuing decline in the number of children born per woman during her reproductive age. As Randers correctly observes, richer women increasingly choose a job rather than more children. The NLTG forecasts from the Trends editors recognize these factors, but conclude that the global population will continue to move upward, approaching $9 billion in 2050. Three arguments are particularly persuasive. One key factor is the resilience of religious belief, which encourages people to have children. A second factor will be the proactive effort of government in many countries in creating incentives for having children in order to offset the negative consequences of a rapidly aging population. And third, research shows that the long-term psychological benefits of having children offset the short-term burden, making it a wise decision despite economic incentives. Rander's LTG model expects global GDP growth rates to slow substantially, while the Trends and LTG model forecast GDP to grow at a healthy rate through 2050. Global GDP equals the entire production of goods and services in the world economy each year. It can be calculated as the labor force multiplied by productivity. The labor force will follow the broader population. Therefore, under the LTG model, it will peak and be in decline by 2052. More significantly, the LTG model anticipates productivity growth to slow as well. Randers argues it will prove difficult to raise productivity in so-called mature economies, where most people work in personal services and social care. However, as explained in previous issues of Trends, the slowing of productivity growth that we've seen in the OECD in recent years is primarily attributable to entering the transitional phase that comes at the middle of every techno-economic revolution. The regulatory mechanisms, business models, and human capital have to be adjusted to permit digital technology to truly transform the entire economy. The key difference between the LTG and NLTG worlds is that the LTG world's slower growth will lead to a smaller population and a lower GDP in 2052. This will mean continuing poverty for billions. However, it will also lead to a lower demand for resources, which the LTG proponents see as a good thing. Under the LTG assumptions, the use of resources will grow but stay within the carrying capacity of the planet. The LTG forecasters also see the non-energy ecological footprint staying within the world's biocapacity, so they do not foresee shortages of resources or food before 2052. Perhaps there is no bigger area of disagreement between the LTG and NLTG schools of thought than on the topic of energy. Both models start with productivity and population and use those factors to calculate future GDP. Then, based on the expected impact of technological advances in energy efficiency, that is, energy use per unit of GDP, it is simple to calculate future energy demand. Under the LTG model, global energy use will peak around 2040 and then decline as efficiency growth exceeds GDP growth. On the other hand, GDP growth, as forecast by the NLTG model, continues to grow beyond 2050 as GDP growth outpaces improving energy efficiency. Randers contends that over the next 40 years, the shift toward less carbon-intensive energy sources will continue and accelerate because global society will get increasingly worried about climate change. In fact, he believes 40% of the world's energy in 2052 will be supplied from hydro, wind, solar, and biomass. As explained in the trend, Taking Advantage of America's Natural Gas Windfall, the trends editors insist that there is a strong case for believing otherwise. The LTG forecast anticipates that 60% of energy will come from fossil energy in 2052, and annual carbon dioxide emissions will be at roughly today's levels after peaking around 2030, and then decline back to current levels by 2050 and continue thereafter. However, the no limits to growth view sees the rapid escalation of fossil fuel use as necessary to ensure rapid growth, raising all but a small fraction of the global population out of extreme poverty, and assuring high levels of affluence for the top billion or so. According to the LTG forecasters, the rich world, made up of the United States and the rest of the OECD, will be surprisingly hard hit. they will hardly see growth in after-tax disposable income over the next 40 years. In fact, the LTG model implies that the average U.S. citizen is likely to see his take-home pay decline by some 10% by 2052. The reasons for the decline will be slowing productivity growth in mature economies, a declining capacity for quick decision-making, particularly in the U.S., and the need to repay foreign debt, particularly the U.S. debt to China. China, on the other hand, will experience tremendous growth. Per capita after-tax income will grow fivefold through catch-up of rich countries' practices. Naturally, China's growth rate will decline when incomes rise, but in 2052, the average Chinese will be nearly as rich as the average European. Some of the 14 big emerging economies, collectively lumped together under the term BRICE, will do well and follow the path explored by China. But others will fail in their effort to take off. Average per capita after-tax income will grow threefold. Finally, under the LTG assumptions, the rest of the world will only manage to match historical growth rates, which means a doubling of per capita income in 40 years. The rest of the world will, in other words, remain poor because of its low starting point. The LTG forecasts advocated by Randers lead to five key policy recommendations. 1. Slow population growth. Have fewer children, especially in the rich world where each child has a high footprint. 2. Reduce the ecological footprint. Eliminate greenhouse gas emissions from coal, oil, and gas, first in the rich world, by effectively banning the use of fossil fuels. 3. Help the poor with clean energy. Construct a modern low-carbon energy system in the poor world, paid for by the rich world. The energy system would be based on hydro, wind, solar, and biomass resources, and most likely supplemented with carbon capture and storage retrofits on utilities burning fossil fuels. 4. Temper short-termism. Establish supranational institutions to help nations adopt policies that help our grandchildren. And 5. Establish new goals for rich societies. That is, pursue increased well-being in a world without growth. Everyone strives for higher income, even though beyond a certain threshold, increased income does not automatically lead to increased well-being. This vicious circle could be broken by banning future income increases and concentrating social attention on increasing your well-being within the limitations of a fixed annual income. The worldviews referred to here as limits to growth and no limits to growth make clear the high-stakes battle now taking place for the hearts and minds of decision-makers and opinion leaders in government, business, and society at large. Based on this important trend, we offer the following forecasts for your consideration. First, as more evidence becomes available, the NLTG argument will become predominant, with only a relatively small minority adhering to the LTG point of view. As Randers readily admits, humans have a natural bias in favor of economic growth, increased wealth, and more available options. Until recently, the LTG point of view was able to appeal to the powerful human need for security. But as explained previously in Trends, fears based on such concepts as peak oil, mineral shortages, pollution, and limitations on food production have all proven to be overblown. The global fresh water crisis is real, but it's clearly manageable. And second, new evidence will show that, contrary to LTG expectations, climate change throughout the 21st century will be essentially benign. According to a review of 14 different studies of the effects of future climate trends by Richard Tall of Sussex University, the overall effect is positive today, and it is likely to stay positive for the rest of the century. Professor Tall calculated that climate change will be beneficial up to approximately 3 degrees Celsius above pre-industrial levels. The latest estimates of climate sensitivity suggest that such temperatures may not be reached till the end of the century, if at all. The Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, whose reports define the consensus, is sticking to older assumptions, however, which would still mean net benefits until about 2080. The chief benefits of global warming include fewer winter deaths, lower energy costs, better agricultural yields, fewer droughts, and richer biodiversity. Significantly, the greatest benefit from climate change comes not from temperature change, but from carbon dioxide itself, because it's the raw material from which plants make carbohydrates and thence proteins and fats. As Dr. Ranga Mainani of Boston University has documented, using 3 decades of satellite data, 31% of the global vegetated area of the planet has become greener, and just 3% has become less green. This translates into a 14% increase in productivity of ecosystems and has been observed in all vegetation types.